You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Ava Berardi. The hopes of constructing the first tsunami evacuation tower on the Long Beach Peninsula are once again alive after reinstatement of a key federal program. Long Beach officials confirmed last month that they were once again pursuing significant funding through a Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, grant program. FEMA reopened applications for its Building Resilient Infrastructure and Communities program, or BRIC, earlier this year. This comes after a year-long delay spurred by Elon Musk-led efforts from the federal government that sought to get rid of government programs deemed fraudulent and wasteful. But last December, a federal judge ruled FEMA could not eliminate the BRIC program funding and ordered the agency to reverse course. Before the delay, Long Beach officials were optimistic about their renewed effort to build an evacuation tower. The tower could be a safe haven for at least 800 people in the event of a tsunami triggered by an earthquake along the Cascadia subduction zone. The BRIC award provides funding for all phases of the project, including design and other pre-construction work, as well as the construction of the tower itself. Long Beach also qualifies as an economically disadvantaged rural community under FEMA, meaning if funded, the city would be left to cover just 5% of the project's total costs. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer, online at chinookobserver.com.
Manzanita City Councilors have approved an ordinance annexing 17 acres in the city's urban growth boundary. This came at the request of Manzanita Development Group, LLC, which plans to develop housing at the property. The city's newly adopted middle housing, zoning, and land division ordinances will apply to the annexed land. City councilors unanimously approved a first reading of the ordinance in June and held a second reading last week. The ordinance will take effect by the end of July unless appealed by the Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals, or LUBA. The land is zoned for housing and will be developed regardless of whether or not it is annexed by the city, and city staff say they see no grounds for an appeal to LUBA. This story comes to us through a news partnership with Manzanita Today.
The Douglas fir is iconic in Oregon. It's the state tree, and it's on most license plates. But JPR's Roman Battaglia reports one group is trying to save Oregon's oak trees, which they say are just as important.
Belinda Brown is a member of the Pitt River Tribe, who live just over the border in California. She says historically large savannas of oak trees filled the valleys.
The lower bands completely depended on that oak habitat for their food source. So acorns and salmon, staple food when Safeway didn't exist.
Brown works for the Loma Katsi Restoration Project and helps coordinate involvement with tribal governments during habitat restoration. The wide-open oak habitat looks far different since Europeans arrived on the West Coast. Much of it is full of conifer trees, so much so that the oaks are practically invisible.
Our elders would tell us this is a land that's not cared for. This is all, there's debris all around, there's encroachment all around. It's not cared for, it's not clean, it's not well kept like a house. And for us, Aboriginal people, that is our house.
East of Medford, crews work on a dense thicket of fir trees, leaving a cemetery of stumps and piles of branches waiting to be burned. In a cleared patch, a cluster of stumps circles a withering oak tree.
So if you can imagine all of these stumps grown up and they're 12, 15, 20 feet tall, some of them probably as tall as this cedar here, you couldn't even see this oak.
That's Rob Strahan, a restoration ecologist. He's part of the Klamath Siskiyou Oak Network, a collaborative working to conserve oak habitat in Southern Oregon and Northern California. The network started in 2011. They've done about 6,000 acres of restoration work. Jamie Stevens from the Klamath Bird Observatory says oak habitat tends to be where humans also like to live, which is why it's degraded so much. The practice of quickly putting out any and all wildfires has also changed the landscape.
That's where the Douglas fir have become more abundant. And as the Douglas fir move in, they are close to the oak trees, they crowd them and they overtop them. And because the oaks are adapted to fire, the conifers kind of outcompete them in the absence of fire.
In 2020, the group got together to identify the areas where oak habitat restoration will have the most impact. The goal of the current project is to bring back those historic oak landscapes across 4,000 more acres. Amelia Liberatore from the Southern Oregon Forest Restoration Collaborative says they're working against the clock.
And it takes 200 years to grow a 200-year-old tree. So, you know, we can do this work now and save those 200-year-old trees and have those benefits right away.
She says this project takes place across both federal and private lands, helping to create a more effective restoration in the long term.
Because the wildlife doesn't really care who owns it, you know, and wildfire doesn't care who owns it. So when we work together, we're able to make progress together, even though it is time consuming.
The collaborative has cut many of the fir trees down, opening up the habitat again. Strahan says because this is federal land, the larger trees remain, reserved for government timber sales.
They're above a diameter cap and too big to take out.
Still, the work has produced results. Steven says she can hear the changes on the landscape.
This morning, we're hearing birds like lazuli bunting, ash-throated flycatcher, and those are species that weren't here before the restoration.
Steven says the network only has the money to do the initial restoration work, and it'll be up to the federal government and private landowners to keep the fir trees at bay. This project is expected to be finished within the next few years. Organizers hope that oak trees will again join Douglas firs as a major part of the Pacific Northwest landscape. I'm Roman Battaglia in Ashland.
It's been more than 3 years since the Eugene-based company Arcimoto shut down manufacturing its limited supply of electric vehicles. But owners and enthusiasts in Oregon are still coming together to show off their quirky rides. KLCC's Nathan Wilk joined them at a rally in Springfield.
A line of three-wheeled electric vehicles races across the Lane County countryside at 55 miles per hour. My driver, Pam Basilius, talks to me over the wind rushing in through the open window. As we ride through neighborhoods, some passers-by pull out their phones to take photos or videos. Basilius says you tend to draw attention when you're in an Arcimoto.
I feel like a star.
Arcimoto's fun utility vehicle looks a little like a wide motorcycle, but with two front wheels and a rounded roof. Kathy Pustavari, the manager of the enthusiast website Arcimoto Hub, says she bought one after her son took a test drive. She says her son is autistic, so the lack of blind spots made it a better option for him than a car. And she says she finds it convenient for day-to-day travel around her town of Corvallis.
I have gassed up a vehicle myself in Oregon about 8 times. I still have to figure out how to gas up a vehicle. That's how much I drive this.
Eugene High School teacher Dan Robinhold used to ride a motorcycle, but quit because he thought it was too dangerous. He says he likes riding in his Arcimoto because he can still feel the open air and see the birds flying overhead.
It makes driving much more social. Someone you know is walking across the crosswalk in front of you and they don't just wave, they say, oh, hi, how's it, you know, you can have a short conversation as they cross the street in front of you.
I'm still in the back seat of Basilius's vehicle as our rally arrives at a property outside Springfield where Brad Harness keeps his collection of Arcimotos. There's a Chick-fil-A branded delivery vehicle called a Deliverator and a vehicle skeleton that's been stripped for parts. Harness was Arcimoto's former research and development director. He now owns a business called FUV Mods, traveling state to state to make repairs and other aftermarket upgrades.
Washington, Oregon, California has a good population of vehicles. Nevada and Arizona, the population is not as large, but there are vehicles there. And then the vehicles have kind of migrated north from Florida.
Between Arcimoto's stock and his own collection, Harness says replacement parts are still plentiful. But he says the vehicle's battery modules are proprietary, and that can create challenges.
You're not going to find another set of batteries that fit in our spot. And I don't think another company is going to spend the time to engineer it into our vehicle when there's only 1,000 vehicles total built.
Arcimoto has faced its share of financial issues over the years, some of which have led to complications for customers. In 2024, the company's phone line and website went down. Today, customers say those resources are back up, and Arcimoto has parts and vehicles for sale. Eugene Weekly reported earlier this year that the company is facing eviction from its Eugene facility, but recent social media posts from customers indicate that it's still open. At the rally, attendees cited several potential reasons why Arcimoto didn't take off, like price, timing, and limited driving range. Pustavari with Arcimoto Hub says if they had been released right now, with gas prices recently topping $5 a gallon in Oregon, she thinks the vehicles would be flying off the shelves.
I think a lot of other EV owners are like, electricity might be expensive, but not that expensive. So I think smaller is going to make a comeback.
Robin Hole, the teacher, says he hopes Arcimoto can sell the design or partner with a bigger car manufacturer.
I think that's what all our hopes are, is that it'll come back as out of the ashes, resurrected as having somebody else make it, because it's a great little piece of vehicle.
Arcimoto didn't respond to a request for an interview for this story. Last year, the company's founder and former CEO Mark Frohnmayer started a new business called Arcitrike and applied for trademarks on vehicles. Little else is known about the project, and Frohnmayer told KLCC he had, quote, no comment, yet. This is Nathan Wilk reporting in Springfield.
Local and regional news are brought to you by our news partners and by the KMUN News team. For more local and regional news, go to kmun.org/news.